Chapter 77. At 454 feet in length, the Ibn Battuta was one of the largest dredge ships Giordino had ever seen. Owned and operated by the Belgian company Jan de Nul, it was one of just a handful of self-propelled cutter suction dredges in existence. Unlike a regular suction dredge, which slurped up mud and goo from the sea floor using a long trailing vacuum tube, the cutter dredge also had a digging mechanism, or cutter head. In the Ibn Battuta's case, the head was a 6-foot diameter ball faced with counter-rotating tungsten carbide teeth capable of chewing through solid rock. Affixed to a hull-mounted boom that could be lowered to the seafloor, the cutter head resembled the open jaws of a megalodon shark waiting to bite. The dredger had been operating 50 feet from shore and was moored by a pair of huge support legs, called spuds, that protruded through the ship's forward hull. The ship was perpendicular to shore, with its stern facing the channel, which played directly into Pitt's hands. Giordino, approaching the ship from the stern, spotted a heavy length of chain dangling over the dredger's starboard rail. He eased the bullet alongside, then cut power. Quickly climbing out, he snared the chain and attached it to the bullet before it could drift away. Hoisting himself up the chain, he grabbed the ship's rail and pulled himself onto the deck. As a potential hazard in the channel, the Ibn Battuta, named for a 14th-century Moroccan explorer, stood brightly illuminated by dozens of overhead lights. Giordino peered from one end of the ship's deck to the other and found it completely empty, the crew still asleep in their bunks. Only a lone seaman stood early morning watch on the bridge, and he had been oblivious to Giordino's approach and boarding. Giordino quickly moved aft, searching for the dredger's controls, which he prayed weren't located in the wheelhouse. In the center of the stern deck, forward of a large A-frame and well ahead of the cutter apparatus, he spotted a small, elevated shack with broad windows. Climbing up its steps, he entered it and took a seat in the rear-facing operator's chair. He was thankful to find that the dredging mechanism could be operated by a single man, but he cringed when he saw that the control panel was labeled in Dutch. "Well, at least it isn't Turkish," he muttered while quickly scanning the board. Finding a switch marked Dynamo, he flicked it to the Macht position. A deep rumble shook the deck as the dredge's massive power generator fired to life. Up on the bridge, the seaman standing watch rushed to the rear window at the noise and quickly spotted Giordino's figure in the control shack. His excited voice was soon blaring over a 2-way radio affixed to the shack's wall. Giordino calmly reached over and turned the radio off before gazing to his left. The high prow of the tanker was just emerging from beneath the Galata Bridge, barely 100 yards away. Giordino abandoned his efforts at trying to decipher the Dutch console and frantically started pushing buttons. One series initiated a grinding sound ahead of him, and he looked up with satisfaction to see the teeth of the cutter head rotating with a menacing whine. The supporting boom stretched horizontally off the dredger's stern, holding the head some 20 feet above the water. It was way too high for what Pitt had in mind.
"Foot doch hier," a deep voice suddenly grumbled at Giordino.
Giordino turned to see a squat man with tousled hair climbing into the small controls house. The Ibn Battuta's pump engineer, still wearing his pajamas under a dingy overcoat, stepped over and clamped a hand on Giordino's shoulder. Giordino calmly raised a finger and pointed out the window.
"Look," he said.
The engineer glanced to the side and froze in shock at the sight of the Dion bearing down on the dredge ship. He started to say something as he turned back toward Giordino, only to be met with the balled fist of a right cross. Giordino's knuckles struck him on the button of his chin, and he wilted like a wet noodle. Giordino quickly caught the man in his arms and laid him gently on the floor.
"Sorry, my friend. It ain't the time for pleasantries," he said to the unconscious engineer before scrambling back to the console.
He sensed the shadow of the high tanker blanket the control shack as he hurriedly surveyed the console. Noticing a small lever to the side, he reached over and pushed it down. With great relief, he watched the end of the boom suddenly drop toward the water. He held the lever down until the cutter head was nearly submerged, its rotating teeth creating a foamy froth on the surface. Releasing the lever, he glanced up the channel. The bow of the huge tanker was now less than 20 feet away. With a helpless feeling,
He stood and watched it approach, knowing there was nothing else to be done.